Welcome back to Stateside. When Hurricane Katrina slammed into New Orleans on August 29th, 2005, we here in Michigan, along with the rest of America, watched in horror and shock. The scenes of destruction from New Orleans were practically beyond comprehension. It's been 8.5 years since Katrina. New Orleans is still rebuilding, still recovering. And in the process, lessons have been learned that might benefit Detroit as it struggles back from bankruptcy and years of shrinking resources and population. Writer Campbell Robertson's recent piece in the New York Times gives Detroiters and decision makers a lot of food for thought. The title, A Lesson for Detroit in Efforts to Aid a New Orleans Devastated by Katrina. Campbell Robertson, very good to have you on Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
So you start your piece by describing a community meeting that happened just 5 mere months after Katrina, where urban planners walked in to present a plan to rebuild New Orleans. Just what did that plan entail?
Well, there were lots of plans going around at the time. There, in November, just a couple months after the storm, the Urban Land Institute put forth a plan that did not quite draw as much attention because it was sort of the plan of the urban planners that would have a lot of changes to the way the city was laid out. But one of the proposals, and it was very conceptual rather than specific, mm-hmm. was that reinvestment in neighborhoods in terms of rebuilding be sort of zoned. In other words, well, we'll start the places that were least damaged and sort of work our way out to the places that were just completely destroyed. The mayor of New Orleans at the time, Ray Nagin, set up a commission, the Bring New Orleans Back Commission, that looked on a ton of different issues, education, transportation, all this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And one of their committees, subcommittees, was the urban planning. And they took some of the urban planners' recommendations and put forth their proposal. And by far the most controversial element and what probably killed it in cradle was an idea that, again, neighborhoods, there would be a moratorium on new permits for rebuilding for 4 months, and neighborhoods would have 4 months to sort of come back and put input and, in a sense, justify the reason to spend recovery money in the damaged neighborhoods of the city.
So justify their existence. Should we keep this alive, right?
Well, yes, in the near term. Maybe over the long term you can come back, but you know, we're going to have limited rebuilding money. And if you can't really justify not enough people coming back, you can't really give a reason, not enough interest from residents, we'll buy out the residents and possibly, I mean, there are a number of things that could be done, but mm-hmm. one option was turn them over to green space. And a map ran on the front page of the Times-Picayune that morning, the paper here, that showed big green dots over certain neighborhoods. And while that was really conceptual, that map was just, when it looked like that, it was so stark that the reaction was swift and the plan went down.
And it strikes me that these planners looked at this as, gosh, kind of a silver bullet. Let's solve a lot of New Orleans problems as we rebuild from Katrina, because wasn't that idea of downsizing something that was on minds anyway because the city had a smaller population but a larger footprint than 50 years earlier?
It's funny. It really wasn't, though New Orleans was headed to be a smaller version of Detroit. In 1960, the population was about 620,000. Even before the storm, it had already shrunk to 400,000-something and was a trajectory to keep shrinking. There were no major economic drivers other than tourism. Mm. And so there were all these talks about how to fix the city, but downsizing really was not discussed because most cities, until they're faced with a disaster, don't have these discussions.
Sure.
Which, you know, if I had laid out some of the lessons in the story a little bit more explicitly that were given to me by planners and people who thought heavily about New Orleans, it's that you need time. And to try to do this immediately after disaster, which is often how it's done, after a flood, after a fire, after tornado. Birmingham is rebuilding neighborhoods after the tornadoes
right.
a couple of years ago. They were just trying to fix a lot of problems in a very short amount of time.
Hit the reset button. And it seems that what the planners saw then as a silver bullet to them looked like what to residents? Racism?
Certainly racism. I mean, you know, in defense of the planners, I think a lot of them really thought this was a reasonable and fair way to rebuild the city and wouldn't leave people stranded in neighborhoods off with no services. Obviously, flood risk was an issue. Some of these neighborhoods were built, you know, not all of New Orleans is below sea level, contrary to public perception, but some of it is, a lot of it is. And so they were thinking this is a logical way back. Well, residents were, A, saying that they weren't involved in the process. They were saying that this mainly came from a lot of the faces associated with white, and there were certainly people saying publicly at the time, oh, we need to remake our city, even along demographic lines, which translates to a lot of these residents, oh, we want to remake this into a wider, richer city.
Boy, and I can only imagine a lot of black residents probably had a real distrustful view of City Hall after that.
Well, and that's the problem, because that sort of poisoned so much going forward. Education reform, sort of rethinking the public housing, you know, all these discussions going forward, you know, because of that initial plan and because it was not thought through and nobody, you know, if I will use the generous interpretation, nobody really thought through the optics of what they were saying.
There you go.
When they planned to shrink the city and mostly the black parts of the city, that, you know, all of the discussions forward were immediately, it started from a level of deep, 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 and I would think somewhat justifiable mistrust. And it made the recovery, in some ways, it stalled discussions that could have been a lot more fruitful had everybody come in feeling like everyone had stakes and everyone was being listened to equally.
If you just joined us, I'm speaking with writer Campbell Robertson. His recent piece in the New York Times entitled A Lesson for Detroit in Efforts to Aid in New Orleans Devastated by Katrina. So this resizing silver bullet plan goes away quickly. Then how would you characterize the rebuilding that has followed since then?
Well, see, and that's where some of the initial downsizers still think that the idea was had merit. Because it was very uneven, and it was even based on how wealthy a neighborhood was before the storm. Obviously, a bunch of private insurance money comes in, and neighborhood's going to come back more quickly. The government aid programs that were designed to help people rebuild were really flawed, and so some places really, really stalled. Neighborhoods that were already kind of in a downward trajectory before the storm only continued afterwards. And to this day, it's been very uneven. From neighborhood to neighborhood. Now, there's some neighborhoods. There's a neighborhood called Broadmoor, very very diverse, black residents, white residents, poor, rich. And that was right under one of those green dots. And that has just been an amazing success story for the city. Very active, very high community engagement, and a shot back. Other areas have been slower. But I think what even people involved in those initial plans admit, they underestimated how much people wanted to come back. And that's a huge difference with Detroit. We're talking a city where hundreds of thousands of people were just hungry to get back to their homes.
Now, you describe people living on couches or guest bedrooms in Texas, just, you know, how do we get back to New Orleans? When can we do that? Yeah.
Within weeks, the storms meeting in church basements in Baton Rouge and saying, how can we rebuild? And those plans to shrink the city just didn't understand or underestimated or ignored that desire of so many people to get back. And they knew their services were going to be short. And, you know, to this day, they think that the services have been unnecessarily slow in coming in some areas, that they could have been a lot faster. But fundamentally, at least under the former Mayor Nagin, it was just laissez-faire. People just came back, got permits, and built where they could.
Like settlers. In a sense.
In some neighborhoods, very much so.
Yeah. Now, we remember, here in Detroit, we remember when former Mayor Dave Bing kind of floated a trial balloon about downsizing Detroit, and it was squelched pretty quickly and effectively. But what I don't think I knew, and a lot of us didn't know, but you bring out in your story, that he actually flew down to New Orleans to meet with then-Mayor Mitch Landrieu, and he told you he did not hold out a lot of encouragement to Dave Bing for this either.
He didn't say exactly what he said to Bing, but Mayor Landrieu did say that he had told Bing that he just didn't think it was going to work here. Now, when I discussed it with Landrieu, the mayor here, he thinks it's legally just not really possible. I mean, you have somebody who doesn't want to move. The Supreme Court has been very skeptical of eminent domain arguments in recent years, and there's a whole body of law that, you know, private property is constitutional law surrounding it. And it's just a lot harder if people aren't willing to simply move than it may seem at the design phase. That isn't to say it can't be done. I mean, a lot of planners who are highly critical of that initial planning process in New Orleans, because it was not inclusive, feel that are still very, very much believers in smart growth management of cities. But they just insist over and over again, you have to have buy-in. You have to have people involved in the design, people involved in the planning. Otherwise, it's just going to fall apart.
So here we have Detroit with 139 square miles, with a shrunken population, shrunken tax base, and the nation's highest blight rate. And so it sounds like what Detroit could learn from New Orleans, its missteps and its successes, begins with that sense of, I've got a stake. I really want to be here. And, of course, the conversation here is, will we wind up with two Detroits? Will the hipsters come in and kind of build their core neighborhoods in Midtown or downtown? But where does that leave the neighborhoods?
You hear the exact same thing down here. There's very much been parts of New Orleans are doing better than they've done in 30 years, 40 years. Restaurant scene is booming like it's never been before. Hmm. There's a big tech industry of young sort of tech entrepreneurs. And there are a lot of people in the neighborhoods that are still certainly not 100% back who talk about two different cities. And that was a big theme of the most recent mayoral election. So it doesn't go away quickly.
What do you think Detroit could learn from the racial tensions that bubbled over when that plan was? Because I'm wondering, did that help racial tensions once that resizing plan went away very quickly? Did things kind of ease? I'm sure there was ground building that had to be done by City Hall, but did it get better?
Well, it's I would say no. Mm. Part of the reason is that Mayor Nagin, who had initially, when he ran, had been sort of a candidate of the business elite, big favorite among the whites of New Orleans, saw a winning issue for reelection. Mm. And so when this plan fell apart, he ran explicitly against the plan proposed by the committee that he had himself appointed.
Oh, boy.
On an explicitly racial appeal. Mm-hmm. And that election was very, race played a high role in that, a big role in that election, and certainly didn't solve things. And, the city has a long history. It's a southern city of racial mistrust. Some of it earned, some of it has been, people live, it's a very, very integrated city in many ways, but it doesn't go away that easily. And especially with a plan like this, when it looked to so many residents like they were just, their neighborhoods were just going to get cleared away without any consideration of how they would have a say in the matter, that's a pretty big hurdle to get over if you think you're going to take part in the rebuilding of the city.
So, Campbell, what would you say when the title of your piece was A Lesson for Detroit in Efforts to Aid a New Orleans Devastated by Katrina? The most overriding lesson for Detroit you think would be?
Well, I know what not to do. You can't do it top down. Top down is just not going to work. I mean, I think that's the New Orleans lesson. I mean, right-sizing, quote-unquote, clearly is a tool, and it is not an awful tool on its own. But you can't wield it from the top down. Everybody's got to be involved. You've got to have neighborhood engagement. And when you get these neighborhoods really involved, I mean, New Orleans East is a part of town that I really focused on in the story. They really wanted the plan. They were very eager to replan their neighborhoods. They just didn't want to be told how to do it. They wanted to be involved in it. And I think that's a lesson for any place.
Campbell Robertson's piece in the New York Times is entitled A Lesson for Detroit in Efforts to Aid a New Orleans Devastated by Katrina. It was great talking to you, Campbell. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.